accepting. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest amongst mankind, whose nature, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me, God. So, how many people have read the entire Bhagavad Gita? As it is. Okay. So, I'm still working on it. I read it, but I'm trying to understand it. So, chapter 7, chapter 1 is the problem, right? If there's no problem, there's no need for a solution. So, in chapter 1, Arjuna's problem comes up. And unless you've read the Mahabharata, the story, it's kind of hard to understand exactly, what the real problem is like that. So in his purports, Prabhupada gives a little bit of a summary, how many people have read the Mahabharata? There's some good translations now. Krishna Dharma's translation in English is really good. It's very nice, But it's a very exciting story when it's presented properly. It's about 100,000 verses, something about this translation. But it's a civil war, between the Pandavas, the sons of Maharaj Pandu, and the sons of Dhritarashtra. And there's so many things go back and forth, and there's many people who aren't just black or white, good or bad. There's a lot of people who are kind of complex personalities. And so it's very, very hard sometimes to tell what's right and what's wrong in the Mahabharata. It's a whole complicated, history, and stimulating a lot of real questions about what is right, what is wrong, what is justice, what is truth, what is courage, what is courage, what is cowardice. And so finally this whole thing and all the different intrigues and things like that come together in this one point, the battle of Kurukshetra, and Krishna has things lined up the way he wants to have them lined up after a long time. And then at the crucial moment, Arjuna has a weakness of heart. It's the right moment like that, most very important moment, just before the whole thing is about to start. Prabhupada again and again and again emphasizes Bhagavad Gita as a real essence of our whole movement like that. Our whole movement is based upon Bhagavad Gita. And he says you can't understand Bhagavad Gita unless you worship the deity, right? Unless you appreciate that Krishna is a person. Arjuna is a person. And this is not like some kind of manual about how to use an IBM computer, or how to run Microsoft Word or something. This is a very emotional, personal conversation between two people like that. After this Bhagavad Gita class, Arjuna has to kill his grandfather. How many people here have a grandfather? Nobody? Okay. So, I don't know. After this class, you have to go kill him. You agree with me like that. Of course, Bhishma Dev, loved Arjuna. They loved each other. And then Dronacharya. I had a black belt in karate. It's very, a very personal relationship. And especially with Dronacharya, Arjuna had a very, personal relationship with Dronacharya. And he had to kill him too. And so this kind of brought him to his senses when he saw this. This is the first chapter. He's ready. Okay. Wow. At last. We've suffered so long. These rascals, they've caused us so much problem. I can't use the words he probably was using. He was a Kshatriya. He probably used a few strong words. These blankety blanks, practically speaking, tried to rape Draupadi in public. Maybe like a 16-year-old girl, a very respectable lady, girl. And Yudhishthira restrained us then, but now, at last, here they are, right? And now it's going to be really nice, right, to get revenge. And afterwards, when I go back to Draupadi, and she can say, "Thank you, Arjuna. You really love me," and fold her hair back up and walk around with pride, then I'll feel really good, right? So is that Arjuna's consciousness when it starts? He's a karmi, right? He wants to enjoy the fruits of his righteous religious activities. He doesn't want to cheat. He wants to follow the rules and regulations. But, you know, when it's over, he wants to enjoy. He wants his woman to respect him and, you know, glorify him. Lick his chin. Dogs do that. Like that. And also Yudhisthira too, his brother, was so abused and cheated, you know. So then he tells Krishna, come on, Krishna, put me in front of the opposing army. Let me see these rascals like that, you know. So Krishna is listening to all these big bombastic statements. And he puts, where does he take Arjuna? In front of Dhritarashtra, in front of Duryodhana? Huh? Yeah, in front of Bhishma and Dronacharya. So Krishna is playing the part of Madan Mohan, you know, Diksha Guru, Sambandha. He's trying to pull Arjuna away from Madan, from Cupid, like that, the opposite sex. And so he shows him, this is the result of karma, Arjuna. You're going to have to kill these people you love, like that. So then Arjuna begins to wake up, my God, you know. And then in a little bit more sober circumstance, then he begins to think, and even Duryodhana, I mean, he's a rascal and everything else, but still he's my cousin, you know. Like that. And how can I kill them, you know? So that's his problem at that point. Because on the one side, he knows that, you know, this is what he should be doing. It's a fact. This is wrong. What these people have done is wrong, you know? Other side, he just has his family attachment. An attachment in a kind of more subtle, dignified way, you know? I've told the Bhagavad Gita story to professors, you know, stuff like that. And you can tell it in such a way that it matches up exactly with Hamlet, right? The same problem that Hamlet was facing. Hamlet, of course, the most famous book in the Western world. And you know, he comes down to this point of to be, right? Everyone knows this, right? To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether it's just nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of Kauravas, right? And by opposing in them, you know. It's exactly the same problem. Having to sacrifice your own personal, you know, family relationships with what is the truth. And it's the most difficult. Prahlada Maharaj says the most difficult thing anybody faces. Our family attachment may become ISKCON. We may become very much attached to devotees and things like that. And then we discover some problem in ISKCON. And we don't want to see it, you know. Don't want to face it. Very big fight amongst ourselves like that. And that's the biggest problem, right? Have the courage to fight with these family attachments and things like that. And also very, very subtle. Not just chopping things off, but having to cut very finely, you know, in the family relationships like that. Yeah. Everybody move a little bit forward. Is that maybe a little bit closer? Yeah. So at the end of the first chapter then, Arjuna is totally confused. He can't walk away from everything. He's a kshatriya. He's attached to his nature. He has to fight. He has to manage. He has to do these things. You know, he can't give it up. You know, but at the same time too, he can't engage in the fight. So in English, I'm not sure how you say it in Russian, but in English you say, "Damned if you do, and damned if you don't." Right? Yeah. So at that point, what happens? All of his material options are exhausted. What happens? Yeah, you know, he can't walk away and he can't stay and fight. Huh? No? Yeah, at that point he surrenders to Krishna, hoping that Krishna can solve this problem. And what does he say? Sanskrit. Sisyaste hum. Yeah, very, very famous. Sisyaste hum. I'm your disciple. Sadimam. Please instruct me. Tvam prapanam. I surrender to you. So this is a very, very, very important point in Bhagavad Gita. This is diksha. Right? This is where he surrendered to Guru and accepting him. He's willing to be convinced. Right? He's not convinced. He's not ready to fight. You know? But he's honestly willing to be convinced. You understand? This is what first initiation means. It doesn't mean you're going to be surrendered to, you know, to everything and anything else. No. It means you have enough faith to honestly apply whatever you know. Okay, I'll accept whatever I know. I'll act on that. Right? But you're not, it's not requiring you know everything. It's not requiring that you be ready to go out and distribute books, right? But I'm willing to learn like that. So then Krishna ceases to be Madan Mohan and he turns into Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana, Govinda. And Govinda is? Diksha Guru is Madan Mohan. Shiksha Guru, yeah, after initiation. So then all the rest of these chapters then are just Arjuna has doubts, and sometimes Krishna is sarcastic with him and chastising him. Other times when he's losing his you know, becoming depressed, Arjuna is like encouraging him and talking with, don't worry, it's very difficult, I'll explain it again, like that. So it's a very, very intimate conversation, you know, a very long conversation. And Krishna discusses all the different alternatives. You know, he takes all these things from Vedic literature, all these different things, Varna Ashram Dharma, yoga systems, charity, all these things, karma, right, modes of nature. You know, if we knew the Vedas and Vedic literature, right, then we could appreciate Bhagavad Gita and how Krishna Bhagavan has taken all the Vedas and just put it very nicely, right, in just a few hundred verses like that. You know, this is why people appreciate Bhagavad Gita so much. There are many Upanishads. There's Mundaka Upanishad, Katha Upanishad, and what else? Kalisantara Upanishad. But the Gita Upanishad, you know, is very respected, right? Because Krishna has taken all the Vedas, you know, and come right to the conclusion. So in the second chapter, he begins by suggesting, Arjuna, just do your duty. Don't worry about the result. Just do it because it's your duty, right? And if you do that, you'll get Brahma Nirvana. You get liberation from all anxiety like that. So that's basically the conclusion of the second chapter. But it's not enough, because we're people. We want to do it for somebody, right? We can't just do it because it's our duty. That won't last. So in third chapter, Mayi Sarvani Karmani, 330. There's one small hint before that, but really that's the first time where Krishna says, do it for me, right? You know, but Sanskrit's very easy. Mayi Sarvani Karmani. From me, all your duty, right? Surrender, like that. So it's a big step again in Bhagavad Gita, right? Big step. Now he's saying, do your duty, your karma, your kshatriya karma, but do it for me. Well, many people say that, right? You know, Osama bin Laden said, you know, die for me. I'm representing Allah. Go kill yourselves, you know, right? Yeah. So many people. Napoleon said that, right? Peter the Great, I guess, in Russia, right? No? Marx, Lenin, they all said, do it for me. Right? So fourth chapter, Krishna begins to reveal who he is. Huh? You know, Ajopi's son, Abhyayatma. I spoke this message to the sun god, how does it go, to Vivaswan. He spoke it to Manu, other way around, how it goes. You know, Manu. Then Manu spoke it to Vivaswan. Then it came down to Maharaj Ikshvaku. Then Arjuna says, well, wait a second. You know, we're both like, what is it, 125 years old or something like that? I don't know. You know, something like that. And he explains, you know, Jamma karma chame divyam. I'm the source of all living beings. I'm inexhaustible, right? My karma and my nature and my birth are all transcendental. So then he really begins to distinguish himself from an ordinary human being in the fourth chapter. You know? And after that, fifth chapter, I can't remember, it kind of goes back into more kind of a general discussion. Sixth chapter, he talks about the Dhyana Yoga system. Dhyana Yoga. Dhyana Yoga, you know? Ashtanga Yoga. Yeah? Yeah. Patanjali. How many people here know Patanjali? Patanjali? Yeah? Okay. What is Ashtanga Yoga? No? No? Yeah, this is the system that Patanjali is giving. There are many different philosophers who present different ideas. This Jaimini is presenting karma mimamsa, like that. That even if there's a God, doesn't matter, because he just gives the result of your karma. So do your karma properly. That's karma mimamsa. And we disagree with these things. You know? Well, there's personal involvement, there's mercy, there's things like this. But Patanjali presented in the Yoga Sutras, and those are, his system is very famous. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of his books, describing it's very difficult to do. We have so many austerities, asanas, postures, breathing exercises, very difficult. So when it comes to Bengal in the 19th century, two groups, the Puranistas, the followers of the Puranas, and the followers of the Shaivite, Shiva scriptures, I think those two, they then modernize it. And one group called their system Simple Yoga, or Hatha Yoga, which many times is pronounced as Hatha Yoga. What is Hatha Yoga? It means simple. Same thing, but taken into a modern context like that. And the other group was called Raja Yoga. Raja Yoga. So you still see these many places like that, Hatha Yoga, Raja Yoga. And these are attempts to modernize Patanjali's system. But we say it's not really practical in the current age like that. Patanjali, Yoga Sutras. We disagree with Patanjali a little bit. Patanjali says that ultimately the goal of life is to become like an anga, a limb of Vishnu, right? Like a finger, surrender like a finger, carrying out the work of the master, or like his eyes, like that. So we disagree with this because it's a little bit too much, a little bit lack of free will in this, right? The finger just pretty much does what you want it to do like that, and the eye does what you want it to do like that. So our system, a little bit different, that we're talking a little bit more about this independence and free will to serve Krishna according to our own creative choice, like that. So we have very fine disagreement with the conclusion that Patanjali actually presented, although many people use his system to present impersonalism like that. So chapter 6, Krishna's talking about this system, right? And but what is the conclusion? Last verse, chapter 6. Yogi nam api sarvisham. Out of all the yogis, Arjuna, yogi nam api sarvisham, madgatena antaratmanam. He makes me the goal of life, the obvious like that. Shradavan, bhajateyo mam. Very clear. Shraddha, faith, bhaja, worship. Right? He's the best who worships and focuses on me, like that. So it's very clear. It's very clear. That's a very good verse to memorize. Right? It's very clear that Krishna is saying the best yogi is one who has faith in him, who surrenders to him and worships him like that. Then, in chapter 7, which is all kinds of information, he then tells Arjuna what to meditate upon. I'm the five elements. I'm the three subtle elements. I'm the creator of both material and spiritual worlds, like that. Meditate upon me like this. Use your yoga principles to understand these things, right? Like that. And then he gives more and more details like that. So now, he's talking then about, he talks about people who surrender to him and how they can get out of this material world by using these yoga principles to meditate upon him, like that. But in this verse, today's verse, right? He's talking about the people who don't surrender. You find many places in the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam where it goes back and forth. It talks about the positive aspect and it compares it to the negative aspect. You can become a devotee, you get out of this material world, go back to me. But if you don't, you'll become confused and you'll stay in this material world. So it goes back and forth like that. So today Krishna is presenting four kinds of people who do not surrender to me. Okay, purports. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita that simply by surrendering oneself unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, one can surmount the stringent laws of material nature. At this point, a question arises. How is it that educated philosophers, scientists, businessmen, administrators, and all the leaders of ordinary men do not surrender to the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, the all-powerful personality of Godhead? Mukti, or liberation from the laws of material nature, is sought by the leaders of mankind in different ways and with great plans and perseverance for a great many years and births. But if that liberation is possible simply by surrendering under the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then why don't these intelligent and hardworking leaders adopt this simple method? Well, here's the answer. The Gita answers this question very frankly. Those really learned leaders of society like Brahma, Shiva, Kapila, Kumaras, Manu, Vyasa, Devala, Asita, Janak, Prahlad, Bali, and later on, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Sri Chaitanya, and many others who are faithful philosophers, politicians, educators, and scientists, surrender to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-powerful authority. Those who are not actually philosophers, scientists, educators, administrators, etc., but who pose themselves as such for material gain, do not accept the plan or path of the Supreme Lord. They have no idea of God, They simply manufacture their own worldly plans and consequently complicate the problems of material existence in their vain attempts to solve them. Because material energy is so powerful, it can resist the unauthorized plans of the atheists and baffle the knowledge of the planning commission. The atheistic plan makers are described here by the words dushkritana, or miscreants. Kritina means one who has performed meritorious work. The atheistic plan maker is sometimes very intelligent and meritorious also, because any gigantic plan, good or bad, must take intelligence to execute. But because the atheist's brain is improperly utilized in opposing the plan of the Supreme Lord, the atheistic plan maker is called duskritina, which indicates that his intelligence and efforts are misdirected. In the Gita it is clearly mentioned that material energy works fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. What's the verse for that? Okay, another one. Daiva. You there. The Guru Kula. Daiva Hiesha. They know? They don't know. They're learning. They're learning the hard way. Daivahi esha, daivahi esha, gunamai, mamamaya durataya, mamevan ye papajante, mayamevam tarantite. Alright. In the Gita, it is clearly mentioned that material energy works fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. Other one too. It has no independent authority. It works as a shadow moves in accordance with the movements of the object. But still, material energy is very powerful, and the atheist, due to his godless temperament, cannot know how it works, nor can he know the plan of the Supreme Lord. Under illusion and the modes of passion and ignorance, all his plans are baffled. Yeah. As in the case of Hiranyakashipu and Ravan, whose plans were smashed to dust, although they were both materially learned scientists, philosophers, administrators, and educators. These duskritanas, or miscreants, are of four different patterns, as outlined below. So, Prabhupada, so any questions at this point? Yeah, go on, you're talking. Questions or comments? Sankeet? Hence? Yeah. So, basic principle, Prabhupada is saying that the people don't surrender to Krishna because they have their own plan, they have their own separate desire to establish their own vanity and to establish their own fame, prestige, and enjoy everything by themselves independently. And therefore, they don't want to surrender to Krishna. They want to do it themselves and become God themselves. So he says there's four different patterns described here. The first are, what's the first one? Mudhas. Okay. The mudhas, are those who are grossly foolish, like hard-working beasts of burden. You can see all these things in Vrindavan. Vrindavan has the highest lessons in rasa, and also has simple lessons in, gross reality like that. They want to enjoy the fruits of their labor by themselves, and so do not want to part with them for the Supreme. The typical example of the beast of burden is the ass. Yeah. This humble beast is made to work very hard by the master. Have you seen that in Vrindavan? Yeah, Prabhupada was always talking about, if you're not a good person, you become a dog in your next life and suffer. But if you see dogs in America, it's like, everybody has to go to work very hard, right, all day long. But the dog stays home in the house, in the air-conditioned house, sleeps on the sofa, like that. And you go to America, you go there, there's a whole section for dog food, right? In India, they don't have dog food. They buy in stores. Yeah. But there, they'll be like, one manufacturer will have like 12 different kinds of dog food in a can you can get. Then you have packages like that and so on. Then there's a section for dog jewelry, right? For certain kinds of collars you can get. And one time we were walking, we noticed there was a ladies' hair salon, and right next door to it was a poodle grooming parlor like that. So the lady brings her dog to have the dog, groomed, have its nails cut, have its hair done like that and perfumed. And then she comes in and also has her hair done and perfumed, walks out like that, you know. So Prabhupada was saying, yeah?
When they go to the door and sleep, and when the door passes through, yeah. They have small plastic bags and they take.
Yeah. It's a problem because the dogs, even though they're dressed very, very nicely, it's still passed through anywhere and everywhere. So in the bigger countries now, you have to, it's against the law. So you sell little scoops you can buy and allows you to pick it up like that carefully, you know. Very elegantly deal with it like that. So these dogs are getting so much service, right? Mm-hmm. Their masters are bowing to pick up their stool when they pass and evacuate like that, running behind them like that, you know. So Americans were probably saying about how if you do bad things, you become a dog. And the Americans were kind of thinking, well, so what? Who cares, you know. When they came to India for the first time, I first came to Vrindavan, India in 1978. And then they were real beggars. I mean, these people needed some help. And there was only one kind of dog. It was kind of gray and had his hair was falling off and cracking from bleeding. His tail was broken over, maybe kind of crooked. Some of the teeth missing. And, you know, starving and fighting with pigs for garbage like that. The economy was worse. It was tough at that time like that. So Pop was out walking one time and he stopped and pointed with his cane and said, "This is dog." Like that. Oh no. This horrible condition. Sometimes all the hair gone and all the skin, some kind of disease from nose to tail, bleeding like that, you know, and stuff, having to eat the corpses and things like that. Oh yes. I'll be good. You know. I promise. So yeah. So here you can see the asses. And you see these guys, they pile them full of bricks like that. And it's going to be one boy with six or eight donkeys and they're running down the road with these big load of bricks like that. Or some guy sitting on the donkey, bigger than the donkey like that. You know? But that's in general. Just a few days ago I was outside going, just, you know, kind of not walking nice in the Prakama path. And I saw, and everything in Vrindavan is like being taken care of by Krishna. So even if you become an ass in Vrindavan, I was thinking maybe if you're a cruel temple commander like that, forcing brahmacharis to work, you know, like that. Your next birth you take birth is a donkey in Vrindavan, an ass in Vrindavan, like that. These asses are working hard all day, and their master released them over in some place behind, there's a little fence around there, behind Madan Mohan. And these guys were like, you know, days are over like that. So they were all like rolling in the dirt, kicking their legs up, and you know, like rolling like that. Like that, you know. Stuff. But it was the dust of Vrindavan, right? Even we don't do that. You know, there's so much mercy if you roll in the dust of Vrindavan. So these Brijbasis, in the form of asses, they have this natural inclination to roll in the dust of Vrindavan. After paying for their bad activity, they paid for their bad activity, and now they get a chance to, you know, get some mercies from Krishna. They're just rolling around like that, kicking and screaming, you know, ecstasy, so on. So, but this is the ass, probably saying. The typical example of the beast of burden is the ass. The humble beast is made to work very hard by the master. The ass does not really know for whom he works so hard day and night. He remains satisfied by filling his stomach with a bundle of grass, sleeping for some time under the fear of being beaten by his master, and satisfying his sex appetite at the risk of being repeatedly kicked by the opposite party. So if you've seen the ass sings poetry and philosophy sometimes, but his braying only disturbs other people. This is the position of the foolish, fruitive worker who does not know for whom he should work. He does not know that karma, action, is meant for yajna, sacrifice. So this example, in the animal kingdom, you always see these things, that the ass is impulse pushed by sex desire. So he goes to the female ass and he sings some poetry like that. Like that, you know? And Prabhupada says in the first canto, he says, when the asses run together, you know, across the field, and they smash the earth with their hoofs, they feel so respectable like that. Like, we're the asses, you know. Here we come, watch out, we're the asses, you know. You know? There's a, near our temple in America, there's a hamburger place, people come. And it's really favored by motorcycle guys. These guys are typical asses, big, working hard, and they buy these expensive motorcycles. And when they go away in groups of three, four, or five, like, you know, roaring their engines like that. wait for the stoplight, and then they roar off, and see, and where the asses like that. But they think their poetry is really beautiful. And see, he's oh, yeah, sorry, next lifetime, you know. They think their poetry is so beautiful, and they're singing to the opposite sex like that, and you can hear them. It's just, you know, it's like dramatic, and the female ass is like, you know, doesn't care. And they start trying to physically assault her, and the female ass kicks them in the face like that hard, again and again, like that. And so the guy comes home after working so hard, and his wife's saying, you know, what are you doing? Why are you late? You know, it's like that. Hairs and curlers, smoking a cigarette, you know. I've been with these kids all day. You take care of them. They're like, you know, so, yeah, you know, and, you know, yeah, yeah. But this is some education like that. We begin to appreciate, you know, the situation, these kind of people, the mudhas. Most often, those who work very hard day and night to clear the burden of self-created duties, huh, say they have no time to hear the immortality of the living being. To such mudhas, material gains, which are destructible, are life's all in all. Despite the fact that the mudhas enjoy only a very small fraction of the fruit of their labor, they work very hard for fruitive activities, and enjoy a small percentage. How much percent? You make, let's say you make, I don't know, $3,000 in America is probably some kind of what you need to make minimum. $3,000 in the Silicon Valley where we're from. $3,000 a month. How much of that is taken away by taxes? You know, everything gets taxed in California about 7% for sales tax. Anything you buy, it takes 7% like that. Income tax is something by like 30% or 25%, you know, like that. And it goes on and on like that. So actually it comes down to, and also you have to live someplace you don't want to live, you know, crowded in there. You got to buy a car, you don't really get a chance to enjoy. You drive to and from work. You're spending money on clothes you have to, you know, you don't really want to buy. And when you come home, your body is so tormented, you have to take intoxication. There's no way around it, or else you kill somebody. Either marijuana or alcohol, usually like that, you know. You know, usually. And then after that, you have to have some kind of, like, you know, entertainment. So usually in America, it's videos. They'll go buy some pizza and buy a video, invite your friends over and smoke some marijuana or drink some beer, you know, and then try and have some sex life at night. And the next day, they go back to work like that, you know. 12 hours of hard work. You know, in America, it's very hard work. A lot of competition like that, you know. So actually, it comes down to it. You get about 20% out of $3,000, maybe $600 you can use, you know, for what you want to use, right? And some people want to go to America and work hard like asses and save money, but you only get devotees in America who are like working like regular jobs, and sincere devotees chanting their rounds, everything else. They have almost no extra money. They live a very simple life. They can get a little bit of money together to like. And take care of their family, their mother, father, like that, or something like that, you know. But almost nothing, you know, is available for like even like a little bit of opulent life. It's very simple, devotional practice, and a little money to take care of some family responsibilities. But Krishna takes care of them like that. You can see that. He also does that for devotees like that. But externally, they're caught in the same thing as everybody else. There's no real benefit, right? And then, of course, America, everybody thinks America is so great, Western countries are so great, but you go there, it's not. You know, there's first class, second class, and third class ass. Right? You know, there's a story that two Irishmen, they got off the boat coming to America in the 1890s. This is when everyone was coming to America, the land of opportunity. You know, the Statue of Liberty has this big torch there saying, come to America, the land of opportunity, like that. And so people were having a lot of austerities to come from Europe, where there was some poverty, some famine, some difficulties, and a lot of caste system, a lot of suppression. Keep your place in the system like that. So two Irish guys went through the whole process of immigration, and they're walking around now in America, like Americans like that. And they see two barrels of crabs, right? Crabs? And these guys would go in the bottom of the ocean like that, you know, okay. And so you ever seen a barrel of crabs? They're all just crawling on top of each other, like that, hundreds of, you know, biting each other like that. And there's two barrels, you know, one is for $1 and one is for $3, the barrel of crabs. But they're all just stepping on each other, crawling on each other. This is a material life. So they're watching this, and funny, one of the barrels in the $1 crab barrel, he keeps stepping on everybody else more effectively and biting everybody else more effectively. He stays on top. He keeps grabbing the edge of the barrel and pulling himself up and falling down. And finally, he's able to pull it up himself to the top of the barrel, and he falls into the $3 barrel, the $3 crab barrel. And the one immigrant turns to the other guy and says, "Just see, only in America." Right? You can struggle to get into the $3 crab barrel like that. Yeah. Here's what happens. People leave, they struggle to go from India, you know, where they can pay their, where they can live on 3,000 rupees a month. It's not a lot. Not a lot of extra, right? But on 3,000 rupees a month you can live. But to go to America to maintain the same level of existence, you know, to eat, to sleep, just to go on like that, it takes $3,000 a month per person. In Silicon Valley, for a family of four, it takes $6,000 a month. So 50 to 1 for the rupee, that means you have 100 times more income, right? 100 times more income, but no improvement. You know, everybody the same way, distressed, suffering, everything else like that. So you have first class mudha, right, and third class mudha. But what's the difference, right? What's the difference really? You know, huh? Yeah. Sometimes they spend sleepless days and nights for fruitive gain. And although they may have ulcers or indigestion, they are satisfied with practically no food. They are simply absorbed in working hard day and night for the benefit of illusory masters, ignorant of their real master. The foolish workers waste their valuable time serving mammon. Right? He's the god of money. Unfortunately, where he serves the devil, mammon there. Unfortunately, they never surrender to the supreme master of all masters, nor do they take time to hear of him from the proper sources. The swine who eat the soil do not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. Similarly, the foolish workers will untiringly hear of the sense-enjoyable tidings of the flickering mundane force that moves the material world. They never hear of Krishna. So you got the picture? Like that? Yeah. Bhagavad Gita is meant for, you know, for realization, so we don't, you know, go back with these kind of things like that. Here everybody is surrendered to Krishna. Everybody here is, you know, some faith, some, you know, some attraction, some realization. Mostly here people are on the Majjhima Adhikari platform. Edo Shraddha, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti Nishtha. They have some faith, there is a God. Okay, I'll try it out. Then they begin to try the process, you know, associate with devotees, you know, more intimately. And then they get a stronger taste, take initiation, right? The bad habits start to diminish like that. And you become very fixed, you know. And then you get a real taste of spiritual life, you know, Rushi like that, you know. So we're not engaged like the mudhas, you know. We're working for the real master. You know? We have this idea that we're working for the real master. Even when Prabhupada was here, there are many problems in ISKCON. He said this is normal. So maybe sometimes the temple president, temple commander is not, you know, doing things completely properly. And you might not work for him normally. But you're thinking, okay, you know, this is Prabhupada's arrangement, and ultimately he'll adjust things. And Krishna won't waste our time. He'll make sure that whatever we're doing somehow or other has a good result, you know. So we're working for the Supreme Master. We're not working for, you know, devoted. We're working for Krishna, Prabhupada. And our God brothers and God sisters, we can understand, they're not completely perfect, but I'm cooperating with them because they're also, you know, trying to serve Prabhupada like that and so on. And everything will be adjusted like that. You know? But the mudhas, they're, you see them, recently in America there was a big corporation, Enron. Heard about that? It was a super big power company, delivering electric power and things like that. And many people were working for them for years, and they were getting stock options. You work so much for us, you get some salary, but you also get stock in the company. So some people had worked for maybe 20 years for Enron, and they had a big retirement package where they, when they retired, they would get, you know, twice their ordinary salary for the rest of their life, free medical benefits. They would get they had their stock options, which they could sell for hundreds and thousands of dollars. And they had all this faith in Enron, right, their master. And you see these people too, they have these slogans, they wear shirts, right? They glorify the company. They have certain slogans and very crazy things. It's really, it's like a cult. In Bhagavad Gita it says people in the mode of goodness worship demigods or the Supreme Lord. Those in the mode of ignorance worship devils or ghosts. And those in the mode of passion worship people. One company was W. Clement Stone. He was the founder of this company, big insurance company. And they always were reading his books and what he'd say and his slogans, repeating his slogans, and his picture was on the wall. So it's in the mode of passion, like that. So the faith was like that, some illusory master. But then it turned out that Enron had all these bogus contracts out for energy production that couldn't maintain. And the president and board of directors knew this, so they started selling off all their stock, right? And they made some kind of internal ruling. The employees couldn't sell their stock, right? So the price stayed up, and then the whole thing, I can't say the word, the whole thing came apart, and discovered what was happening. And all of a sudden, people who had $500,000 in stock options, they were worth 50 cents, right? And the retirement packages were suddenly worth zero. So there they were, having worked 20 years for this company, hard, like that, and they had nothing. You know, at 65 years old, they had nothing to retire on. They had to go on looking for a new job to work, like that, you know, with broken fingers, like that, you know? So the mudha, he has all these illusory masters, you know? The ass, he's being beaten by the master, but still he thinks, oh, my master loves me. My master will take care of me, like that. No, it's a complete illusion in life, and people suffer like that. So, but the weird thing is, the odd thing is, they never surrender to Krishna, right? You know, Krishna, someone's making this prayer, Sukadeva Goswami, he says that, his name is Maharaj Parikrama, he says, who could not surrender to such a master as Sri Krishna, who was so kind that he gave a demon like Putana, who approached him with horrible motives, the position of a mother, like that. Who would not serve such a master like that? Well, the mudha, right? He's not later on we'll hear about the Asuram Bhava. He's not really opposed to God. He's just absorbed in his own stupid, selfish ideas and fantasies like that, you know, and doesn't want to hear anything else about what's going on like that. So I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur compares this to Dhenukasura. The different demons in Krishna Leela that represent these problems we have in our own heart, you know. So all of us, you know, all of us to some degree probably have some mudha in us, right? No? I got some mudha in me, like that. You know? And so we should understand these things, these characteristics, and try and, you know, wake up. And opposite, to hear about Krishna, understand who Krishna is. And many, many people in ISKCON, they work like asses, you know, for ISKCON for many years, and then they discover they were cheated, right? You know, they work for many, many years in Brahmacharya Ashram, and then they suddenly, maybe like, you know, don't get married, stay Brahmachari, even though people know they can't maintain it. Then suddenly at 30 years old, they have to get married or else, you know, fall into worse activities. And they have no training, no skills. They're 30 years old, you know. And they become very bitter like that, you know. So in some ways, it was their own fault. One press reporter in San Francisco, I was there, he asked Prabhupada, are there Swamiji? Are there problems in your temples? And Prabhupada said, this is a material world. There are problems everywhere. Right? So you're going to find these same demoniac tendencies and problems in ISKCON. You know, one Prabhupada says one time, he said that the ordinary karmis are 80 to 90% crazy. Right? The ordinary people are 80 to 90% crazy, 80 to 90% demoniac. So if we take Madhyamadhikari as being half sane, right? That means in ISKCON you'll find people basically are half crazy, half mad, right? Have you had that experience? Yeah. You know, people come and they say, oh, this is it, I finally discovered it, it's all wonderful. And you thought, well, you know, calm down, you know. People here, some people are great, some people are very pure here, like that. But to be here doesn't mean everybody here is perfect. That's because they're shaved up and got a kirtan, doesn't mean they're, you know, they're all perfect like that, so on. But at least you'll probably find them, but they're at least half sane. So you've got the opportunity to live someplace where people are half sane, or go outside where they're 85 to 90% crazy. Yeah? Where do you want to live? Well, you know, it is gone. Yeah. But still, we always have to fight against these things in ourselves and in our society. Otherwise, they'll expand. That's a material nature like that. So we have to fight against this mudha consciousness and iska, like that, you know. And we have to be in the intelligent asses, right? There was one last thing here. This is famous. I heard this, is wearing iska for a long time. There was an ass, and he was so stupid that no matter what you'd ask him to do, he would always do it. He'd just nod his head like that, no matter how stupid it was. So this competition developed in this one area for people to come, and they would ask the ass to do something. And the competition was that anybody who could ask the ass to do something, he would say no, he wouldn't do it. You know, that was the winner, you know. But this ass was so stupid, no matter how difficult the task was, how painful, he always just nod his head, you know, and do it like that. So finally one man came along and whispered in the ass's ear, and the ass went like that, you know. Somebody asked, well, what did you ask him to do? He said, I asked him to be president of a Hare Krishna temple. ISKCON President Kija, ISKCON GDC Kija. So we have to get rid of this mentality, and you know, we have to work together and, you know, be devotees, but understand who our real master is, as the point Prabhupada is making, by hearing about him all the time. Here it's describing the negative side. It's one little piece of the Bhagavad Gita. You know? The Bhagavad Gita also talks about the positive sides. I'm kind of tied up in the material world like that. We have to get free from this. We have to purify this like that. So any final questions here? Comments? Anybody want to kick me in the face? Okay, there he is. Thank you, sir.
What you say,
yeah.
Cooperating in ISKCON.
Yeah.
How intelligent is it to cooperate with someone who's half crazy?
Ah.
Necessarily cooperate with
everyone in this country. Yeah, because the Majjhima Adhikari, Kanishtha Adhikari, he just kind of worships God for his selfish motives, maybe in mudha, and he can't distinguish who's a devotee or anything like that, you know. But the Uttama Adhikari, he can see how everybody's a devotee. He can see everybody's connection with Krishna, and spontaneously that's all he does see. Just spontaneously, immediately just like looks for that relationship with Krishna, and so he gets the best in everybody. Like that. Prabhupada was like that, huh? Everybody, you could see right away how they're connected to Krishna. But the Majjhima Adhikari, he has to use intelligence. Prabhupada says the Majjhima Adhikari is also a pure devotee, but by cautious, conscious effort, like that, not spontaneous for him. So he sees God, he knows God, he hears about him, he understands who the perfect person is, what his characteristics are like, the perfect my friend, best friend. He also sees devotees. And he makes friendship with them. He bows down to them, you know, Supadeshamrita, like that. And pays his obeisances. He sees the innocent people who just have, you know, bad idea. They're not bad. And he then tries to help them understand properly. And he sees a demoniac, you know. Some of the devotees said, oh, Prabhupada, there are no demoniac people. He said, no, unless you see demoniac people, you won't make advancement. You know. So within our own society, our own mind, our own society, we see that some of these characteristics, some people, they have demoniac activities. And many times they're not even conscious of it. You know, certain things are just like, you know, one person has to have power. It's just like, you can't avoid it. It's just he has to have power. Somebody else has to have, you know, a relation with the opposite sex. So he can't control himself and keeps falling into strange things like that, polluting people. You know? Somebody else has to have intoxication. Right? You know? No? So, but a Majjhima Adhikari, he worships God, he makes friendship with the devotees, he serves the innocent by preaching to them, and he avoids the demoniac. Right? So Majjhima Adhikari means that he's good at avoiding the demoniac element. So I have heard many experiences like this. I know some of my gobblers, they had certain things about them which weren't perfect, you know, yet. And so sometimes you can see it coming, you know, uh-oh. So, yeah. You know, come back. Yes, Prabhu. Jai, Prabhu. Right on, Prabhu. I'll come back in 5 minutes, Prabhu. You know? You avoid it. And if he's a Majjhima Adhikari following, then they aren't so bad you can't avoid it. You're under control enough that you can avoid these things. And you know, but the process will go deep into his heart and eventually purify him like that. Prabhupada said ISKCON is like a bag full of rocks with sharp edges. Right? And if you're doing your service, you keep bothering other people and they keep bothering you and all these sharp edges like that. Someone likes to get up at 2 o'clock, you'd like to sleep until 4 o'clock. So at 2 o'clock he turns the light on, falls over his bucket, you know, and you know, wakes you up and you're screaming at him and you know, like that. You know? So he says, Iskon is a bag full of rocks with sharp edges. But if you stay in the bag, he says, after a while you see all the rocks become very smooth, like that. You know? So just by associating with devotees, your bad habits, you know, they get chipped off like that, and after a while you become very, you know, mellow person. You know? Yeah.
Your holiness that there is some sort of mental deficiency.
Well, in the heart.
Is it being remedied?
Yeah. Yeah, Madhyamadhikari means his disease is under control. It's still there in the heart, but he's taking his medicine like that. And gradually it goes deeper and deeper into the heart. Krishna arranges experiences like that. So that's the point. You know, with in ISKCON, if we're together, then we should be able, we can do it. You can have no problems. If you follow the program strictly, you'll have no problems like that. Yeah? Yeah? Full morning program, full evening program, 16 nice rounds, the Four Little Principles, Prabhupada's guarantee, you'll have no problems. I've tried to do that and I've seen it works, you know, like that. Sometimes what will happen, they may think it's a problem, it's not actually a problem, it's actually, you know, actually some help like that, you know, so on. You know, okay, wait a minute. Yes, sir. Loud. I can't hear you on the fan delay. Who's the Mudha?
Yeah. I heard you about some Bhagavad Gita correlated very practically daily life.
Who's the big Mudha? Huh? Ajamil wasn't the Mudha, kind of, you know. I can't think of any examples right away from the Bhagavatam of people who, you know, Dinukasura in the Garga Samhita describes that's the kind of mentality he had, but it was very celestial at the same time. These are human beings for the most part. The Bhagavatam in some way doesn't deal with human beings. And even the demons and everything are like, probably like, you know, actually Prabhupada gives the example here of Ravana and Hiranyakasipu. You know, but they're like, you know, they're first class mudhas, you know, like that. Yeah. So, final question then. Yeah, last question.
It says in the verse that mudhas never surrender.
Yeah.
How are we here?
Yeah. It says in the verse, mudhas never surrender to Krishna, so how are we here? It's interesting. I think it was here in Vrindavan. About Nanda Swami, he was, you know, then. He said, someone came to me and said, oh, it's very interesting. Prabhupada said you can fall down after you go back to the spiritual world, like that. And because he was kind of interested in this, he said, there's several verses in the Bhagavad Gita where it says, once having gone, they never return. So he said, you're sure? He said, yeah, Prabhupada said it, because the devotee knew he was interested in this. So he went and asked Prabhupada, he said, well, Prabhupada, it says in the Bhagavad Gita here, once you go, and they never return. He said, Prabhupada laughed and said, never means almost never, like that. So sometimes Krishna uses the superlative, and never the greatest like that in that sense. I mean, practically speaking, they never surrender. But, you know, Brahmani Brahmate Kom Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Paya Bhakti Lata Bij. Then we get the mercy of Guru and Krishna. And indirectly, the whole material world is mercy. So the mudhas, after being beaten enough, you know, they begin to have a little bit of intelligence, and then they go to the mode of goodness, you know, by the impersonal laws of material nature like that, so on. But while they're in that mudha body, you know, without special mercy, they don't do it. You know, it just goes on that way their whole life. So it's time for Gaur Arachi. Shri Gortai Kija. So tomorrow, come and hear about Naradamas, Asuram Bhavams, and Maya Pavitas Gyanas. So Prabhupada Ki. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.